Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining Managing Bowel and Bladder Issues. Your host for today is Fiza Mahmood. Ms. Mahmood, you may begin.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. My name is Fiza, and I'm from the Gateway Area Chapter of the National MS Society. On behalf of the Society, I would like to welcome you to tonight's program titled Managing Bowel and Bladder Issues. This program is brought to you through a collaboration of the National MS Society's Midwest Region Chapters. Together, we provide programs, services, and research to improve the lives of people affected by MS. Recordings of this call will be available through each chapter for anyone wishing to refresh their notes or share with a friend. We would also like to mention there is a wealth of opportunity made available by the Society through your local chapter for all levels of participation. We encourage you to reach out to your local chapter by calling 1-800-344-4867 or by visiting their website for a list of upcoming events and programs. Please note that during the first part of this program, during our speaker's presentation, you will be in listen mode. Feel free to jot down your comments and questions as you listen. Following the presentation, the operator will open the lines for anyone to ask their questions. We ask that all participants with questions limit their time to one question per request so that as many participants as possible may enjoy a direct response from Mary Kay. We are fortunate tonight to have as our speaker Mary Kay Fink. Mary Kay Fink is an advanced practice nurse in the MS Center of St. Louis at Mercy St. Louis, where she maintains a focus in multiple sclerosis. She joined efforts with Dr. Barbara Green to launch the founding of the center in 2000. Mary Kay held a variety of nursing roles within St. John's Mercy Medical Center, now called Mercy Hospital St. Louis. She completed her diploma in nursing at Deaconess School of Nursing, her Bachelor's of Science in Nursing at the University of Missouri St. Louis, and her Master's of Science in Nursing from St. Louis University. Mary Kay is committed to enhancing the role of nursing and advanced practice nursing in care of the MS patients. She holds numerous certifications, including a nurse certification in multiple sclerosis. She is an active participant and leader in several committees, both nationally and locally, and she leads the Nurses Journal Club and generously mentors many. Mary Kay is married to her husband, John, and has two amazing sons. She is an avid reader, a great cook, a nurturer of backyard wildlife, and enjoys lounging at Lake Norfolk, Arkansas. It is with great pleasure that I hand this over to Mary Kay to start her presentation tonight.
Well, Fiza, thank you for inviting me to attend tonight and present this information. For any of you who dialed in on May 12th, I do send my sincere apologies. It was absolutely my mistake. The MS Society did a great job communicating everything to me about the date, the time, the dial-in number, et cetera, et cetera. But in my mind, I was doing this presentation on Tuesday the 13th, and so when I got the call finally, when they got connected to me, that I had missed the conference call, I felt absolutely horrible. And so that being said, I can't blame that on MS. I know that those of you in the audience that may have MS can use that sometimes as a moment, whether it is a true one or not, but I certainly can't. It was just an oversight and scheduling error on my part. So again, I truly apologize. I hope to make up that content tonight, and I'm going to kind of go through quickly because I think most importantly, this needs to be an interactive dialogue, and we can open the lines with questions. Likewise, I'm going to tell you that I'm going to talk about the bladder issues first and then bowel issues and management of each of those. I will tell you, though, that for some, this is an embarrassing topic, and it is something that really is utmost important in providing a fine quality of life for people that are living with MS. So I say kind of let the barriers down and make sure that you have a good conversation with your healthcare provider if you do have bowel and bladder issues. Likewise, many healthcare providers may not bring up these issues, so I think it is important as these issues arise within your life and they are affecting you in terms of symptoms of MS, that you make it first or second on your list of things that you need to talk about when you have your office visit with your physician. And if you don't get to that, come back in and have another visit. Or if your physician is not, or healthcare provider, excuse me, is not comfortable addressing issues related to bowel and bladder, please ask them for a referral so that you can have these issues addressed. Now, that being said, I'm not promising that as healthcare providers we can fix everything, but I think we can offer some tips to make your quality of life better in living with both bladder and bowel issues. I will start by talking about the bladder. And I like to break things down into what we call primary symptoms, secondary symptoms, and tertiary symptoms. And the bladder lends itself well to this good illustration. When we talk about primary effects of MS on the bladder, what we are talking about is direct impact on the bladder activity because of lesions within the central nervous system. And so because the lesions within the central nervous system alter or delay messaging to the bladder, and we're going to get into that a little bit further, we call that a primary symptom. Now, a secondary symptom of bladder problems may be renal impairment. It may be frequent urinary tract infection. It may be skin breakdown because of incontinence and urine and wetness in the skin. It may be yeast infections, again, because of the same reasons. So those are secondary symptoms related to bowel and bladder. I'll add in there also that often mobility is a secondary symptom of bowel and bladder, or vice versa. People that can't get to the restroom fast enough because of mobility issues may have bladder and bowel issues related. So that's more the secondary kind of symptoms, and we'll talk about management of some of those coming up. And thirdly is the tertiary effects of having bladder issues. And this is kind of what we talked about earlier. Sometimes the embarrassment of having an incontinence event. It may be a change of roles within the family structure where a caregiver is now helping and be responsible for bowel and bladder issues, and that changes the whole dynamic. It may be cost, as the fact that adult protection is expensive, and protection for linens and bedclothes is expensive. So that's a tertiary effect of a bladder or bowel problem. And it also may have some tertiary effects within, like I said, the family dynamic, but also the work environment. And I can tell you many a times within our practice, we are writing letters of accommodations for people that have disclosed within their workplace, asking for accommodations for more frequent bathroom breaks or for assistance in and out of the bathroom, or for their workstation to move closer to the bathroom. So again, if we break it into primary, secondary, and tertiary effects of one kind of symptom, the primary effects of bowel and bladder have to do with the nerve pathways. The secondary effects have to do with the result of what's going awry within the bladder and and bowel management. And tertiary are kind of those ancillary systems that are affected within the world of that MS patient, kind of that whole ripple effect. It affects me, but it also affects my spouse. It also affects my family. It affects my extended family, my work community, my social community, my church community, et cetera, et cetera. Now, that being said, I think when we talk about specifically bladder issues, we know that 75% to 80% of MS patients will have problems with their bladder. We also know, again, thinking of that tertiary effect, that this is number one socially isolating consequence of MS. Folks just don't, with MS, just don't go to their son's soccer practice for fear of knowing where the bathroom is, or if there is a bathroom, that it might be a Johnny on the spot and they might not be able to access that. They don't go to their granddaughter's dance recital because they know they can't make it through the hour without having to get up and go to the bathroom. So this becomes very socially isolating. I will tell you a secondary effect of that, again, is that people tend to dry out, tend to not drink if they're going out into the community if they have bladder issues. And this is really pretty detrimental, as we'll see coming up in just a second. So let's talk about that primary effect. Now, there really are three different types of bladder dysfunction. One's called hyperactivity or a spastic bladder, and this is where the bladder fails to store urine. The second major type is called hypoactive or a flaccid bladder, where the bladder fails to empty. And the third type of problem that can happen with MS that is a primary effect of the MS on the bladder system is detrusor sphincter dysenergia. And that is a fancy way of saying it's a combination of the other two problems, but again, related to messaging. So the symptoms of any of these could include urinary urgency, frequency, hesitancy, meaning not being able to start your stream when you feel like you need to, double voiding, nocturia, which means getting up in the night to go to the bathroom, or nocturnal incontinence, or therefore, in fact, any time of day incontinence. The key, though, is sorting out what kind of problem is causing what symptom. And I like to think of it as the bladder is a belly, it's a balloon in the belly that is deflated. And if things work the way it's supposed to, your urine kind of is produced from the kidneys as the kidneys filter out the blood, drops down the extra fluids and toxins through the ureters into the bladder muscle wall itself. And the bladder, as the balloon, stretches out. And as it stretches out, if things are working the way they're supposed to, and MS is not a problem, what happens is the stretch of the bladder sends the signal back up the spine through the brainstem to the front part of the brain, and the brain registers, oh, Mary Kay, you can wait a little bit longer before you go to the bathroom. So if I have just a mild stretch, Mary Kay, if it's a moderate stretch, you better start thinking about getting to the bathroom. Or if the bladder muscle is stretched a whole lot, that detrusor message goes through saying, you better get to the bathroom right now, Mary Kay. Then what happens is once we're potty trained, again, this is the norm, without MS involved, the front part of the brain takes over. And the frontal lobe actually takes control and holds that urine in place until the proper time. And so when you're seated appropriately or standing appropriately for men in front of the toilet, the front part of the brain then reverses the message, sends it back through the brain, down through the brainstem, down through the spinal cord. But when it exits the spinal cord, it exits and lands in two different places. One, the bladder muscle wall itself, and the other, the valve or the sphincter. And if things work exactly the way they're supposed to, you're properly positioned to urinate, the valve relaxes, the bladder muscle squeezes tight, the urine then is excreted, the bladder muscle wall then relaxes because it's empty, and the sphincter closes up. That's kind of the whole circuitry of urination. For people that have that hyperactive or spastic bladder, also called failure to store, what can happen is that bladder muscle wall or the bladder itself stretches just a very tiny bit before your brain is bombarded with messages saying you have to go to the bathroom. So you see the commercials that say, gotta go, gotta go, gotta go. And that is for this type of problem caused by a different thing than MS, but it's the same type of thing. You have a bladder that doesn't fill up, and the brain is bombarded by messages saying you have to go to the bathroom. You get to the bathroom, you go, and you really just go a thimbleful because the bladder is not very full. But people that with failure to store have frequency. They have urgency. They have urge incontinence. They are getting up in the middle of the night four or five, sometimes six times to go to the bathroom. And again, they're producing urine each of these times, just not at great volume. Now, the hypoactive or the flaccid bladder is exactly the opposite. The urine is stored in the bladder, and the bladder just keeps stretching out and stretching and stretching and stretching. And sometimes that message never gets to the brain from the bladder saying that you have to go to the bathroom. So there's just a delay or a detour of that message. And it's not until somebody would say, look at their watch and say, boy, I haven't been to the bathroom in 15 hours, or the pelvis starts to feel tight and other organs give the clue to the brain that things are awry within the pelvic girdle. So failure to empty has symptoms, again, once you get the message of that urgency, but also of hesitancy, meaning not being able to get started, and retention. You get started and you still can't empty your bladder. And in some cases, this becomes an emergency. So if patients have gone within our practice, we'll usually say 12 to 18 hours without voiding, and they've been drinking appropriately, they need to, and they feel they need to empty, they need to either get to an urgent care or an emergency room to get that bladder emptied. And one of the main reasons why is because there's not back valves between the bladder itself and the kidney. So as it's traveling up the ureter, there's no back valve. So that full bladder can essentially back up into the kidney and cause kidney failure. Doesn't happen very often, but it's something that we worry about and that can be dangerous. And so the last one that we talked about, the detrusor sphincter dysenergia, or DSD, it's often abbreviated, is really failure to communicate in my mind. And I consider this more a down messaging error. So your bladder may fill appropriately. It may get the message up to the front part of the brain that you have to go to the bathroom. And the front part of the brain, the frontal lobe, takes over. But what may happen is the down message may be disjointed or disconnected. And so what may happen in this case is that you're on the way to the bathroom and you may leak a little. So the message has already gotten to the valve to open up. You purposely try to shut that off, and if you have some control, you do. Then you get to the bathroom, you sit on the toilet, and you can't go, and you know you have to empty. And so you wiggle and you squiggle and you push, and finally you get some urine production. But what may happen is it might not be a total empty of your bladder, because guess when the bladder muscle squeezed tight? When the valve was also squeezed tight closed. Again, that dyssynergia, that disconnect between the valve and the bladder muscle itself can be producing symptoms of urinary urgency, frequency, hesitancy, double void, meaning I call it kind of the stand-up, sit-down routine. You feel like you're finished, you stand up, and then you better sit right back down because a little bit more was going to be coming out. Again, all that is the cause of misdirected or interrupted messaging within the central nervous system, and most often in the upper cervical cord or the brainstem. You might be able to find that as kind of the lesion area, so to speak, of bladder dysfunction. So what can we do about that? Well, people that have failure to store, actually we have some medications that are oral medications, gel medications, spray medicines, or patches that may allow the bladder muscle to fill up fuller before the message gets to the brain saying you have to go. They're typically called antispasmodics. And there's actually a couple of different ways that those work very directly with the muscle wall. And so if one doesn't work for some patients, sometimes we'll switch to a different one, or we'll switch to a different class of medicine. The downside of some of those medicines is they may cause dry mouth and constipation, and occasionally, especially in the elderly population, may cause some confusion or kind of some fogginess. So that's a medicine that we would consider, or a group of medicines we would consider if people have that failure to store. People that have a flaccid bladder, Again, we will take a couple of different approaches here, and one would be that we would try medicine to help that bladder muscle wall squeeze it tighter. We may try medicine to help the valve open up fuller, or we may try clean intermittent self-catheterization, where patients learn how to put a catheter in, drain their bladder, and pull the catheter out, so that we know that that bladder is getting emptied in between times devoid and or appropriate timed intervals if to getting no messages. And detrusor sphincter dyssynergia, because it's a combination, often we use a combination and we try many different things to get the right bladder management approach. So sometimes the antispasmodic medicines work. Sometimes if we think the valve is spastic or the bladder muscle wall is spastic itself, we'll use a general class of antispasmodics, such as diazepam or baclofen, sometimes work to help a truly spastic bladder. Likewise, there can be some spasm within the pelvic muscle wall itself that may be causing problems with urination or defecation for that matter. And we may try some actually trigger point release related to that. So those are kind of the approaches to manage bladder issues on the primary level. On the secondary level, and remember we said UTIs, things like that, skin sores, incontinence episodes that may increase changes of yeast infections, or even kidney failure. What we want to do is manage the bladder the best we can. And our goals for management mean maintaining renal function, establishing normal voiding patterns as best we can, and avoiding urinary tract infections. And I don't know how many times I'll tell patients that one of the best things you can do for yourself is drink water, because people with bladder issues don't want to drink water because they think it's going to actually increase their need to go to the bathroom. And what we find is things like alcohol, things like caffeine, spicy foods, some acidic drinks, and concentrated urine actually irritate the bladder muscle wall itself. And so we want to encourage that the fluid intake in these cases. We'll ask patients also to keep a diary to help us manage that. And when we talk about behavior modification, which again affects some of that primary but also some of that secondary symptoms, we're asking people to do timed voids, to drink appropriately in bulk, to do external crudae, which is kind of a gentle external pressure on the bladder muscle wall itself. We want to help remove barriers if mobility is the issue. We want to make the trip to the bathroom as fast as it can be and as safe as can be, and as much as we can conserve energy, we want to do that. To address some of the tertiary issues, we certainly want to remove any kind of barriers. We want to make sure that these issues are discussed in private, that when you have your conversations with your family about that, that it remains kind of a medical intervention and talk and not necessarily a interpersonal relationship. Some alternatives to medication and managing bladder includes, like I mentioned before, intermittent self-catheterization. We also may have patients that need indwelling or suprapubic catheters if they don't have the abilities, physical or psychological, to perform clean intermittent self-catheterization, or they don't have the support system to do that. Occasionally, we'll offer indwelling or suprapubic catheters that stay in and attach to a leg bag that is easily hidden under clothing to manage bladders. And I will tell you, we'll have many patients that do this to conserve energy and to conserve time and to conserve their relationship, because they're having to have their spouse transfer them to the toilet. Mm-hmm. And sometimes bladders management in itself takes about 30 minutes just to have one void, and 30 or 40 minutes a day 5 or 10 times a day make for a miserable life, spending most of the time in the bathroom. Occasionally, we'll offer patients to have reconstructive surgery where they have an alternate way of urine being excreted, so into an ileostomy. And Botox has really taken place within this field in terms of managing that hyperactive bladder. So it may be appropriate for some patients that have that hyperactive bladder to have Botox injected into the bladder so that that bladder muscle itself really is relaxed and can fill up with urine. The downside of Botox is that people need to learn intermittent self-catheterization, which, again, is not difficult for most patients, but it's a must if people have Botox. Okay, I'm going to take a turn, and we're going to talk about bowel dysfunction. Bowel dysfunction, again, can be thought of in different ways. Primary, meaning that there is a reason that is related to the nerves that the bowels don't empty, which is the most common symptom of bowel dysfunction in MS, which is constipation. But patients can alternate between constipation and diarrhea. They may have incontinence of stool, certainly impactions, meaning where the stool doesn't come out at all, or a total loss of motility or of the colon itself, where an ileus may form. Now, we certainly know some of this may be, again, related to the messaging and the slow transient time of that ball sending the message to the brain and the brain sending the message back. Also, we know that there may be pelvic floor spasticity, which I talked to about earlier, meaning that pelvic floor and those muscles just are so tight and so spastic that it's hard for the rectum and the pelvic muscles to relax, to make a coordinated effort to eliminate stool. There also may be poor perineal sensation. So even if somebody gets the message, they may not realize that they are indeed having a stool at any given time. Now, secondary causes of bowel problems related to MS are often healthcare providers' fault. We give patients a whole host of medicines that cause constipation. And so that's one of the very first things as healthcare providers we need to look at when a patient is having trouble with especially constipation. We want to look at that list of medicine and see if anything that we're doing is causing that, see if it's an absolute medicine that's needed for symptom management. But we also want to encourage patients to have, again, adequate fluid intake. And we're talking about 64 ounces of fluid, preferably water, per day. We want to have them examine their dietary intake. What is the fruit and the fiber and the vegetable intake within that diet? Are you getting enough fresh fruits and vegetables? Now, again, many people have heard me talk, and I will say that if I had to pick one intervention in the world to fix MS or to help MS symptoms, it would be exercise. And exercise, likewise, will help both the bowel and the bladder. And so exercise itself stimulates the messaging to have a stool evacuation. So that is an important physiological effect of exercise. Exercise helps the trunk stay strong. It helps the abdominal muscles stay strong. It helps the pelvic floor relax in some cases. Likewise, exercise can help relieve some spasticity that may be part of the cause of bowel problems. So again, like I said, constipation is the main reason or the main symptom related to bowel problems in MS. And again, it's mostly related to that messaging, that slowed lower bowel where stool tends to sit and the water absorbed from that, and then therefore the stool is hard and difficult to evacuate. We want to make sure that people that have bowel issues also are getting worked up, because MS is not always the cause of bowel problems. People with MS are not immune to other healthcare issues. So I just lost it. So I'll move on to something else. Diverticulitis, diverticulosis can be a problem in the general population that also can affect bowel habits within the MS folks. We also may have cancer or irritable bowel syndrome, which is what I was going to say. It came back to me. And so people also may have malabsorption problems or food allergies or problems related to that. So how do we address that? Well, certainly, again, a dietary diary is helpful. We want to make sure that people are getting in the right diet, they're getting enough fluid. Again, we're going to encourage exercise, even if people are confined to a wheelchair, whether it be a power chair or a manual chair. Exercise is still important, especially for people that need some trunk control. Positioning is important, and people may need to kind of think how they're sitting on the toilet and or have special seating made. There's such thing called a squatty potty that can be used to help reduce pelvic tension that helps relieve or allow the stool to pass. We want to certainly, especially when we're talking about some of the tertiary effects of bowels, we want to make sure that there's privacy. We want to make sure that there's safety related to transfers on and off the toilet, or that if they're using adult protection to help maintain that, that that's checked and changed often so that there's not any skin breakdown related to that. And then every once in a while, we'll have somebody that looks to alternative elimination, meaning something like a colostomy, so that they can self-manage their elimination. I'll tell you, though, socially, one of the more disabling bowel problems is not necessarily constipation. It's diarrhea or the unpredictability of stool. And so that needs to be addressed, too. Again, people tend to stay in if their fear that is going to be that they'll have a bowel movement outside in the community. So how else do we address this? Well, I have somewhat of a pyramid approach. I always think that using natural ways are first in line. So we want to look at diet. We want to look at fluid intake. We want to look at exercise. We want to look at positioning. But from there, we might look at bulk-forming agents, such as kind of the fiber, whether that's in a fiber one kind of bar or in a supplement. We may think about that. Along with that, there is a product that adds water to the stool that is helpful in terms of evacuation. So we may look at that. These are not habit-forming, but they help your bowels form a habit. And I will tell you, that's what's most important, is that people don't fixate on having a bowel movement every day, but a bowel movement two or three times a week may be appropriate. And it takes about 3 months to establish a good bowel routine. We look at stool softeners to see if the other steps don't work. Occasionally, we'll use some oral laxatives, especially if that's what's needed kind of on a routine basis to establish that colonic activity. Suppositories or rectal stimulants are used occasionally, again, helping establish that routine, that predictability of bowel movements. There is, and I will tell you, one of the ones that I like to use is a product that actually releases CO2 into the, or carbon dioxide into the lower bowel, that helps the bowel expand and stimulates that bowel to have a natural evacuation by contracting the lower colon itself. That's one that I like to use because it gives predictability. There's also these little tablespoon mini enemas, again, offering the same kind of thing, stimulating the lower bowel so that it stretches a little bit, and therefore it then speeds the contraction of that lower bowel so that you can have a more natural evacuation. Occasionally, we'll use enemas, and people may become dependent on enemas. Enemas tend to be messy and require the help of a care partner a lot of times. So if we can manage otherwise, we'd like to. For people that are very constipated, what may happen is they may get impacted, meaning the stool gets stuck in the colon. And indeed, what may happen is that stuck stool is much like concrete, and it kind of blocks up the pipes, but sooner or later, the pressure from the upper large intestines overtakes that, and watery stool may come out and seep around that impacted stool. So somebody may end up having diarrhea, and you think it's true diarrhea when in fact they're really impacted and they may need some manual disimpaction, meaning I'm pulling that stool out digitally. And then, as I mentioned before, occasionally we'll go to surgical interventions, meaning alternative eliminations. But also, of late, we've heard of physicians using, again, Botox to relieve pelvic floor spasm that may be the cause of incontinence with that rectal tone that is just so tight that won't allow for passage of stool. Again, I think without going into very specifics about products, which I don't want to do because I don't want it to be an advertisement for one particular product or not, what I want you to remember and take home from this tonight before we open up for questions is that, again, this bowel and bladder management really can improve somebody's quality of life. We like to see people out and active in the community. We don't want people to be shy and not talk about these issues with your healthcare provider. So you need to be willing to bring it up as an advocate for yourself. You need to be willing to go see specialists if your physician or your healthcare provider is not comfortable managing these things. And you need to be willing to give it time, because nothing is going to happen overnight. Nothing's going to be a simple fix. And there may be a lot of things that need to be tried before we move on to other things. And like I said before, it takes 3 months to establish a good bowel routine. Fizza, I think I'll go ahead and open it up for questions. I think we have about 20 minutes or so.
Sure, perfect. Thank you, Mary Kay. I really appreciate that. Operator, if you want to go ahead and open up the lines for questions, that would be wonderful.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the number one key on your phone. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the number one key on your phone. Our first question comes from Joan. Joan, go ahead. Joan,
hi, Joan.
Joan, your line is live. Our next question comes from Paul. Paul, go ahead. Paul, your line is live. Our next question comes from Sue. Sue, go ahead. Sue, your line is live.
We're so embarrassed we won't even ask the questions.
Our next question comes from Julie. Julie, go ahead.
I have an inert stem urinary implant in my back, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It worked a lot better before I started exercising. Have you heard of any other people having this done?
I have. And so what the caller is referring to, I forgot your name already, sorry, is that occasionally people will have a device implanted that actually sends an electrical stimulation to the bladder for people that have failure to empty, that squeezes that bladder muscle and allows for urinary elimination. The device itself is a computerized electronic device. The leads, though, themselves go into the bladder muscle wall itself. And if you have recently experienced changes within that and if you don't feel it's working properly, it may be worth a call to your healthcare provider who implanted that to make sure that those leads have stayed in place. Because every once in a while, one of those will get knocked out, and it's not sending the impulse to the bladder muscle like it should. One of the downsides of bladder stems is that the leads themselves right now are not MRI compatible, so it's difficult to do a spinal MRI when people have bladder stems. I think it's FDA approved for brain MRIs, but not spinal MRIs. So that's kind of a weigh the options with your healthcare provider, especially if you have spinal disease that needs to be monitored. So I would direct you back to the person who implanted your device to make sure that those leads are in the right place still.
Our next question comes from Karen. Karen, go ahead.
Just curious how much, if I'm retaining urine, and how much do you think is too much in your bladder where you should self-cath? 200 mLs or?
Usually about 100 milliliters, I start to get suspicious. And what I'll do within our practice is we'll try some interventions, some behavior modifiers, come back in, get reevaluated in 4 to 6 weeks to see if there's been improvement. If it's still in the 100 to 200 range, I think it's time to learn self-catheterization. And I know most people are fearful of that, but once people learn self-catheterization and they get comfortable with it, they'll tell me how liberated they feel now because they can empty their bladder on their own schedule. They know if they empty it before they go to the store, they'll be able to make it through all of Walmart without stopping at the front bathroom and the back bathroom. So, again, my suspicion starts going up at 100. By 200, I'm saying we got to do something. Hope that was helpful.
Our next question comes from Mildred. Mildred, go ahead.
Yes. Whenever I lose consciousness, doze or sleep, the second I wake up and stand up, the bladder empties, and I can't get to the toilet or the commode in time. This is even if I emptied the bladder before a half-hour nap. I also have increased back spine problems. I don't know if there's any suggestions that you have for me or not.
You know, my suspicion is that you're never emptying your bladder fully. Without a more formal bladder evaluation, I probably couldn't offer much more, but I think it would be important to have somebody discuss kind of your bladder issues more in depth, maybe do at least a pre and a post ultrasound to see kind of where you're at. If nothing else, a post-void ultrasound to make sure after you urinate that you are indeed going all the way. What your experience is sounds very common, especially if you throw in the fact that there might be some mobility kind of delays also. So it's important to go back. Now, there's a couple of ways to get urinary evaluations. One is some neurologists and some practices in MS actually take this on and manage folks' bladder. I think some OBGYNs are also managing bladders in addition to urologists. And so I would ask, first of all, your neurologist, whoever's managing your MS, where they are with bladder management, if they do it or if they refer it out, and then follow up appropriately with that referral. Now, it can be an in-office kind of visit and test and diary and history, but it also may be a more involved urodynamic study, which involves some kind of monitoring and electrodes that look at things like when do you get the first urge to void, how full is your bladder, how full can it be, how strong is your stream when you empty, how tight is your pelvic floor when you empty, what interrupts your stream. So again, I will direct you back to your healthcare provider, specifically your MS provider, to see where to go next. But it really does sound like that you're probably not emptying all the way.
Our next question comes from Ron. Ron, go ahead.
Yes. Hello. Thank you. I was urinating every hour, I drink a lot of water, 8 glasses a day. And my neurologist referred me to my family doctor who started me on something called Desicare.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's starting to work because now it's even later in the day. It's been 5 hours since I felt, instead of feeling like I have to go every hour, it's been 5 hours and I still don't feel like I have to go. Now I'm thinking, is it dangerous if I don't feel like I have to go?
Well, I think you have a good point, and I would add a couple of things to that. Is one is if you sip all day, you're going to pee all day. And so one of the things that we recommend is people, and I don't know how else to say it, but to drink in bulk, because what you drink takes about 3 hours to get through the urinary system. So that's one way to help address frequency just by changing how you drink. But it is, I'm happy to hear that you are drinking the water appropriately. Vesicare is one of those medicines that I said helps the failure to store bladder, that hyper-reflexive bladder, but occasionally, like you alluded to, we can go too far with that, and you may end up not getting the message in a timely fashion that your bladder does need to empty. So what I might recommend is that you have an evaluation while you're on Vesicare to see if you are emptying after you void, and to see if that needs to be adjusted, either the dose or the timing of that medication. Or quite frankly, sometimes it's as simple as setting your watch, and even if you don't have the message, getting into the bathroom and trying to void every 2 hours or 2.5 hours instead of waiting till 5, so that you're, you know, not causing any kind of harm by having a too full bladder.
And our next question comes from Paula. Paula, go ahead.
Hi. I would like to know, I have the detrusor kind of malfunction, and I have to catheterize to be able to go to the bathroom at all. And I've had things go wrong before, like optic neuritis, and I've recovered my vision, and my knee went out, and it came back. I don't understand why the bladder... Why won't it get better, too? It's been over, a year and a half.
Yeah, it's a finicky thing, isn't it? And actually, it's just one of those bad luck things. It happens to be one of your relapses that's going to be leaving you probably with lifetime residual. One of the reasons is, like I said earlier, often the cause is even a very tiny lesion within the cervical spine or within the brainstem, and the real estate there is very crowded, and so you can have just one little dot that might not ever be picked up on an MRI in terms of a new lesion or even an old lesion that will cause that problem. And there's not just any way for that pathway to regenerate or regrow a different way. So often that's why people that have bladder problems have them kind of long lasting. So, if you are clean intermittent self-cathing, if you continue to have to increase the amount of times that you are intermittent self-cathing, you may think about Botox, because people that are cathing, 10 and 12 times a day, that's invasive in terms of introducing germs into your bladder, and it may be appropriate to get Botox. If you're a candidate for that, if your insurance will pay for it, which is a whole other discussion we won't have tonight. But if all those would align, then you may be able to reduce the number of times you're intermittent self-cathing. But it sounds like that's probably going to be your best bladder management technique from here on out.
Our next question comes from Boyd. Boyd, go ahead.
So 3 times a day, no, morning. I used to get 6,500 out, and I'd do noon about 3,500, and like 7 o'clock at night, 3,500. Is that about norm, or should my bladder empty, but is that a norm or something? I'm kind of lost, because 6,500 in the morning, 3,500 noon, and 3,500 supper time, So.
And you're talking about milliliters, I'm assuming?
Yeah, sure I am.
That seems like a lot of urine production, but I'm not sure kind of what, without looking at your specific medical history. I'm not sure kind of what other medicines you might be on that are enhancing or producing urine. I think other medical conditions cause a large urine volume, but overall that's a fairly large urine volume. And so if you're not under primary medical care, you probably should get that looked at. Like I said, other medical conditions and other medicines can cause that high urine volume. And some of those include diabetes, and so you want to make sure that you're being treated appropriately for all the rest of your medical health.
Our next question comes from Lucille. Lucille, go ahead.
Yes, my bladder will give me the signal and there'll be some pain, but it won't empty. And there'll be times where there is a lot of pain and it still won't empty. Are there any solutions to that?
You know, a couple of things. One is if you're getting pelvic pain because your bladder is full, that's probably failure to empty, that hypotonic bladder, and that needs to be addressed. Occasionally, like I said, medicines can help that bladder muscle squeeze tighter, or occasionally we'll have some success with bladder medicines helping the valve relax so that you have a more effective void, but it certainly needs to be looked at. Pain at urination is not normal, and that does need to be evaluated. Pain at urination also may indicate a urinary tract infection, but I don't find that so typical in MS patients. Patients that have urinary tract infections, what I find most typically is they have a change, and that's the key word, change in their frequency, change in their urgency, change in their urge incontinence. But they don't have frank pain. And I think if you are having pain, you need to get that checked out.
And I think we'll go ahead and do maybe one or two more questions, just looking at the time, to try and be conscious of everyone's time for tonight.
Okay. And our next question comes from Madeline. Madeline, go ahead.
Hi. I have spastic colon, which I cannot hold at all, and opens up anywhere. I can hold diarrhea, but not this other. Any help?
You know, we've been having some pretty good luck with referrals to physical therapy. Now, it's hard to find a physical therapist that does pelvic floor health and wellness. But once you do, they've been very helpful in helping with that spastic colon, with just that the rectal spasticity and the rectal tone. That may be something that you may want to look into. And you may not, in your community, and I don't know where you're calling from, but in your community, you may have to check with the MS Society, or the OBGYN community may have some clues to who those people may be, because a lot of times the OBGYNs are referring people for pelvic floor exercise and modifications.
Okay, I think that's about it for questions.
Okay.
So are we ready to start the survey?
Yes, I just wanted to go ahead and thank Mary Kay again for the wonderful presentation and information that you gave our clients tonight. And I would just like to thank everyone on the line for joining us for this call and for also being available for it having been rescheduled. I do appreciate all of the time put into this. So at this time, we will invite our participants to remain on the line and give their responses to three short survey questions. And then we also have a program survey that we include in our confirmation packets. So if you did not receive that, please give your local chapter a call, or you may call our MS Navigators at 1-800-344-4867, and they will connect you to your local chapter. Again, thank you, Mary Kay, for taking time out tonight to present this topic. I hope you all have a wonderful evening.
Thanks, Visit, for inviting me, and thank you, everybody, for participating.
Thank you so much. Have a good night, everyone.
And our first polling question is, I learned something new that I will use in my everyday life. Please press 1 for yes. Press 2 for no. Polling has closed for this question. One moment while I tally the results and prepare the next question. Our second polling question is, the content was presented clearly and in an unbiased way. Please press 1 for yes and 2 for no. Polling is closed for this question. One moment while I tell the results and prepare the next question. And our final polling question is, the speaker was knowledgeable about the topic. Press 1 for yes and 2 for no. Polling is closed for this question. One moment while I tell the results. Polling has now closed, and do the speakers or facilitator have any closing comments?
No, again, I just would say thank you again for everybody's participation. I hope that you live well and healthy with your MS.
The conference is now concluded. You may now disconnect.